It is Wednesday, April 24th, and it's the start of a new era only having to carry around one phone. So I have my replacement phone. The microphone works. Thank God. And I've left the other phone at home at the house. And speaking of the house, that's where I'm going, even though it's 11 o'clock. I came to work today on Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Did you guys notice that and think, why is he recording on Wednesday? So Tuesday I had a dentist appointment and I said, I'm not going to drive to work because I'm going to already be an hour at the dentist. So I just worked from home. I had a very busy day. But today, even though it's one of my work from home days, I came to the office because one of my friends who used to work for me at Field Turf is taking a new job. So we're going to go out to our favorite barbecue restaurant there in Calhoun, where we go eat, me and some of the guys that used to be on my staff back in the halcyon days of my career when I had a staff. Let me tell you something. In this life, you're going to get paid for what you can do or what you can get paid to get other people to do. All right, when you have a staff and stuff, I am happy currently to be in a position where I get paid for what I can do. Running reports and making queries and spreadsheets and whatnot. Having a staff is sort of a responsibility. That's why bosses get paid more, because they have a staff of people. But I had a great staff when I worked at Field Turf. Great guys who worked for me. And from time to time, even a woman. Guys and gals. So I really like those guys. And we're going to get together one last time before our friend takes a job in another town. Closer to his house, by the way, so good for him. So I am leaving to go to eat lunch with him. I'm going to finish the day from home. So we're going to have one of these Christian commutes where I have to pause the show. And I have to remember to hit pause and not stop so I can resume the show after I get out of Dub's High on the Hog barbecue. Big night tonight. Got a playoff game in baseball and then another important regular season game for my son's Little League teams. So that'll be fun. And then a long night of working on queries. But for now, the Christian commute. We're in part three of A Billboard Too Far. The A Billboard Too Far series. And what great timing for them to tell me that I couldn't come back to First Baptist Church because I was running out of show topics. That is sarcastic. It was horrible. So this is part three of A Billboard Too Far. Oddly, about the same time of the year, April, that I started coming to First Baptist Church, after the Freemasonry thing at Roland Springs went down. So, isn't that kind of funny how it happened around the same time? All right. We got that, and we have a question in the inbox about PPA loans. So, I don't think I did this one. I think I missed this one. So, sometimes when something comes through the voicemail box, it only sends me one email. So if somebody calls and leaves two or three messages at once, it gets on the same thread and I miss it. So I saw this one on a thread from Jeff when he had left messages and I couldn't remember answering it. If I already answered it and just forgot, sorry, I'm 41 years old. Wouldn't be the first time I repeated myself. But I don't think I've answered this question before. But don't forget to send me some questions in the inbox because I'm running out. But first and foremost, as always, we're going to do the Bible chapter review. And now we're completing the pericope about Mary learning about her pregnancy. So we had the earlier pericope in Luke chapter 1 where Zacharias and Elizabeth learn about the child they're going to have. And then the angel goes from them and he goes to Mary. And he tells her that she's going to bear the Messiah, even though she's a virgin. And when we last left off, Mary had asked the angel, how can this be, for I am a virgin? Because you're going to bear a child. Well, I'm a virgin, she says. How does that work? And he explains to her that the Holy Spirit is going to conceive the child within her, in so many words. And he goes on to say this, and behold, even your relative Elizabeth has also conceived a son in her old age. And she who was called barren is now in her sixth month. For nothing will be impossible with God. And Mary said, Behold the bondslave of the Lord. May it be done to me according to your word. And the angel departed from her. So we remember from the previous pericope about Elizabeth, it said that she kept herself in seclusion for 5 months. And then when she came out of the seclusion, all of a sudden she's pregnant. So now she's 6 months pregnant, and the angel's saying, hey, not only are you the virgin going to bear a child, your relative Elizabeth has conceived a child in her old age. She's 6 months pregnant. And when we as the story progresses, Mary is going to see Elizabeth. I forget who goes to see whom. But that's where we see that John the baby in the womb, John the Baptist, flips with joy at being in the presence of the Messiah in the womb. So Jesus and John the Baptist basically are together since birth. Their mothers are relatives, we see here in the scripture. I guess they're cousins, it doesn't say. It just says they're relatives. So Elizabeth and Mary are relatives. And John the Baptist is, let's see, if his mom's already 6 months pregnant, he's going to be born. He's about 6 months older than Jesus. And we'll get to that story when we get to that story. For now, let's finish this pericope. Mary learns not only about her miracle pregnancy, but of the God-ordained miracle pregnancy of Elizabeth, because she's barren. So everybody's going to have an understanding. This woman was not able to conceive. It's taken an act of God to make this barren woman conceive. Now, by the way, theologically, we know that all babies are knit together in their mother's wombs. The ones that make it all the way and even the ones that miscarry are all ordained by God. God is the creator of life. That we know there is a will of man, even as it says in John, that Jesus wasn't born by the will of men. The will of man to what? Have sex with his wife. Okay? Or, people aren't always married, sadly. But there is some human act that precedes that conception. And a lot of times, especially in that time, people wanted a baby to come from that act. But now we see Mary, she's a virgin. This is all God. Nothing to do with the will of man, as it says in John. And even as the case with Elizabeth, the will of man was to have a baby, but Elizabeth and Zacharias could never have one, but now God intervenes and makes this baby John, who is not virgin-born like Jesus. So John doesn't have God literally for his father, but he's still appointed for a special purpose, just like Jesus is appointed for a special yet bigger purpose. And what's Mary's reaction here? Behold the bondslave of the Lord. In other words, look at me. Whatever God wants to do in my life, let him do. I am the bondslave of the Lord. I belong to him. She says, may it be done to me according to your word. That's the faith of Mary. Not you're ruining my life. Not I'm not up to this. Not I'm supposed to marry Joseph. You're jamming me up. It's may it be done to me according to your word. This is someone who is submitted to the will of God in her life. And let me tell you something. The will of God is going to happen in your life whether you want it to or not. Because the angel's already come and told her, this is what's going down. This is going to happen. Can you explain it to me? I don't understand. Yes, this is going to happen. May it be done to me according to your will. That is the attitude that Mary has. That's the attitude we should all have with God. We should all say, behold the bond slave of God. May it be done to me according to your will. Now, she got to bear Jesus. All right? That's an honor that she had that we'll never have. Okay? But we need to have the same attitude as Mary. May it be done to me according to your word. By the way, this is not Mary giving permission to bear Christ. That had already been foreordained. The angel didn't come to ask her permission. The angel came to tell her, this is going to happen. But what Mary is demonstrating here is that she's a faithful servant of the Lord. She happily accepts what is going to happen to her. And she's going to have to watch her boy die on the cross. She doesn't know this now. But it's going to happen. And by the way, speaking of what Mary knows, the next time they sing Mary, Did You Know, at Christmas, you can say, yes, she did. Because the angel tells her all that stuff is going to happen right here in Luke chapter 1. Mary, did you know? Yes, I've read Luke chapter 1. Mary, did you know? Yes, the angel told it to me, all of it. And by the way, should we be singing Mary, Did You Know? This is bonus material. I'm done with the Bible chapter review. The angel departed from her. When we see the angel next, he's going to be convincing Joseph not to divorce Mary. Okay? This is just bonus material. Should we be singing Mary, Did You Know? At Christmas time. Yes, artistic license. I get it. The song's really about Jesus and what he's going to do. And that he's the Savior. That your baby boy would one day rule the world. Yeah, so all that stuff. Mary, did you know? So you're supposed to imagine the nativity. And here's this young girl with her baby. Nothing more precious. But this is an extra special baby. All babies are special. This is an extra special baby. It's the Son of God. And he is going to change the world. He is going to bring in the kingdom for God. He's going to die for everybody's sins. Every little mother loves their baby. They're snuggling the little baby, and it's all sweet. And they're there in the manger, and they're all snuggly. But no, this, Mary, did you know this? Okay, I get it. We're talking about what Christ did for us, looking back. But number one, Mary, did you know, is a stupid song because, yes, Mary knew. The Bible says right here. Here's the second reason. Here's the big reason we shouldn't sing it. All right? Big, big reason why. Who is Mary to the Roman Catholics? Don't want. Hold on, somebody. That's my Christian liberty, Seth. Just because somebody else is wrong doesn't mean I should do. Listen to me. We are trying to win the world for Christ. I'm going to repeat that. We are trying to win the world for Jesus Christ. I know it's all predestined. I know it's all set up. I get it. But Christians, we have a great commission. We're trying to win the world for Christ. We have an opponent in the devil. We have false gospels that we deal with. And there are literally millions of people ensnared by the demonic false gospel, the Roman Catholic Church, that tells them they have to work for their salvation. They have to do a penance. They have to get grace from an organization. It's not just faith. It's faith plus works. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Galatians 1:8 says that. Anybody who preaches that is anathema. And that's every Roman Catholic priest, okay? Even the nice guys, even Robert De Niro from the movie Sleepers, who's a good guy trying to help those boys. Even Sister Aloysius in my favorite movie, Doubt, who's a good guy. Everyone in that magisterium is putting those works and putting those burdens on those people and making them believe that they have to contribute, that they have to work for God, that they have to do. Not only that, biggest quote-unquote church in the world, millions of deceived people with a Bible and an understanding of who Jesus is. I want you to think of this. When you walk into a Roman Catholic church, there's a big crucifix of Jesus on the cross. Right there. Now, you can talk about Second Commandment violations, but right there, it's a pictorial. This is what happened. This is the Son of God. He died for your sins. They know that. But what's happened is the story has been twisted by the magisterium to put those people under law, to put them on a burden. They are one of the biggest, dare I say, unreached people groups that needs to hear the gospel and be say they have a knowledge of it, but they don't have the feeling of it. And there's an entire cadre, seminaries full, magisteriums full, College of Cardinals full, of priests and cardinals trying to stop them from understanding the real gospel of Jesus Christ. And as a part of their mixed up religion that strayed away from the Bible, Mary is the Queen of Heaven. In Roman Catholicism, Mary is considered the Queen of Heaven. That's why if you look around at enough Roman Catholic statues, and I've seen them, you'll see a statue of Mary with a crown on. She's the Queen of Heaven. And that's the worst kind of paganism, like Hera is the Queen of Heaven with Zeus. Because just as Hera bore Zeus's children, Mary bore Yahweh's child. And they pray to Mary. Ave Maria. That's a beautiful song, right? No, that's a prayer to Mary. We should only pray to God. And the idea is if they ask Jesus' mom something, and she goes to Jesus for him, he'll do it for his mom. That's the idea of praying to Mary. Ask me something, Seth, will you do this for me? No, stop bothering me. Ask my mom. My mom's going to come bother me. My mom bothers me all the time. Everybody's mom bothers them. But yes, I'll do it for you, mom. Because you're my mom. You're my mama. I love my mama. Okay, that's their idea. And they pray to Mary. O Blessed Virgin, O Queen of Heaven. That is necromancy. It's talking to the dead. A prayer to a dead person who has no power on heaven or earth. More than anybody else has. Oh, here's something sad. There's a gym in Calhoun that's a liquor store now. That's quite the opposite of health. And they're going to... Oh, there's a liquor store that went out of business. Oh, they just moved. All right. Well, sin moves down the street. They're playing to Mary, the Queen of Heaven. Mary, did you know? You know the Roman Catholics love to sing that song because they're talking to Mary. You have an entire group of people that you need to reach for Christ, that being Roman Catholics, who sit there and pray to Mary. You don't need to be talking to Mary like they do. Listen, I used to work for the Marists, okay? The Society of Mary. It's an entire order of priests who've dedicated their life to serve God in the name of Mary. And they run a really good school, and they're really good to those kids, and 25% of them aren't Catholic. But let me tell you something. I have seen the Society of Mary, and they're really good to me. I have seen the Society of Mary, and I've seen their Mary statue right there holding baby Jesus. The idolatry around Mary in the Roman Catholic Church is sinful. It's dark. And we, with gospel light, need to pierce through that darkness to reach those Roman Catholic friends and neighbors and loved ones we have for Christ. We don't say, oh, they go to church. It's just different from us. I'll just leave it at that. No, you won't. And if they come to our church services at Christmas time, they don't need to hear us singing to Mary. Okay? Context matters. If there was no Roman Catholics in this world, and there was no, or how about this, if the Roman Catholics adopted biblical doctrine, if there was no idolatry of Mary in this world, surrounding us and surrounding his church, or surrounding Christ's church, we could sing Mary, Did You Know all we want and say, yeah, it's kind of a stupid song because Mary knows, but granted the artistic license. There's a zillion Christmas songs. Can you not sing something else than Mary, Did You Know? Stop trying to emote people. That's one of those songs that makes you well up and cry, especially women. Stop it. Mary, Did You Know? Yes. How about this? Mary, Did You Know that the Roman Catholic Church is doing evil in your name? Is blaspheming your son in your name? Did you know? Did you know? All right. We'll end the Bible chapter review right there. I'm rolling up on dubs. I'm going to be on time. It's an 11:30 lunch meeting. And these people work for me. Or at least they used to. And if you work for me, you know that when you set a lunch meeting, It doesn't mean you leave the plant at 11:30. That you leave the office at 11:30 is that you get to the restaurant at 11:30. I didn't even remind my friends of that, okay? If I've had any effect on their life at all, it's that. It's that. That, and if we're in a meeting and it goes long and it's lunchtime, we're done, okay? I'm a very dogmatic person. I'm dogmatic about the Bible, and I'm dogmatic about my lunchtime. That's how God made me. I can ease up on stuff like lunchtime, but I will not ease up on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are not called to do that. Okay, let me pause the show. When I come back, we'll do the question about PPA loans, and we'll talk about a billboard too far, part three. I'm back. Took an executive lunch today. Means I'll be working late into the night to make up the time. I don't punch a clock, but I gotta make the time up. And now I'm on the way back to Cartersville. The Kia has a quarter tank. I think I can make it back. We'll see. I'm gonna make it back fast because I drank three or four glasses of sweet tea. It's half sweet, half unsweet tea, so I guess I really drank two glasses of sweet tea. But I gotta go to the bathroom, so now I'm gonna drive fast. I guess I could have used it in the restaurant. All right. So we're done with the Bible chapter review. I guess I hope you all feel as passionately about people in the snares of a false Christian religion as I do. I have Roman Catholics in my life. My gosh, my son's on a soccer team. I have a lot of Roman Catholics in my life, okay? And I care about those people. And I want everybody to know the gospel. Strangers too, but I just can't stand it because I hear it. You know, I hear it like, oh, we had First Communion or we had Confirmation. By the way, it's the season for that. I think that happens after Easter. And like, here's these people. And on the one hand, you feel good because those are family milestones for them. Like, I don't know, like when a Hispanic girl has a quinceañera. Like, they don't have a sweet 16. They have a quinceañera when they're 15. It's like, I'm so proud of you and your family, and you got to have this big party. Or even like when a Jewish kid has a bar mitzvah, that's a big deal for a family. All your friends get together, and, you know, you have a party, and you have pictures. You know, I've seen those pictures of, like, here's our child, and he's going through this, and this is his stepping stone. It's like, yeah, but, God, you're just teaching him the wrong thing. And thankfully, we live in a country like America where we're free. We have freedom of religion. We don't fight about those things, and we can have those relationships of kinship, of being teammates and friends or coworkers or whatever. But man, we can't leave those people in Rome without a Christian witness, without a biblical witness. You know, I don't get all riled up like that for nothing. All right, so let's move on to the question in the inbox. Like I said, I don't think I answered this yet. If you have a question about Christian theology and apologetics, you can write to SethDunn88@gmail.com. That is SethDunn88@gmail.com. Or you can dial 470-315-0875. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance. Now, I got a question today. It was about the Sabbath, Sabbatarianism. But that's not the question I'm going to answer right now. The question I'm going to answer came in on the line, on the phone line. And the question is this. It's from Jeff, by the way. Jeff in Slow Driving, Florida. It's about, are Christians obligated to repay their PPA loans, or should Christians not get them altogether? So, if you're a Christian, I mean, I guess if you're your ethical obligation is the same on you whether you're a Christian or not, because right is right and wrong is wrong, because morals are universal and they're grounded in the nature of God, and He's God whether you believe in Him or belong to Him or not. But a Christian ethic, how we're supposed to look to the world, we're supposed to look like to someone, we're like somebody who pays our debts. When you enter into a contract or a loan contract, what you're saying is, if you give me this money, I promise to pay you back. And of course, if the lender is smart, they'll have collateral like a house. Now I'm thinking to myself, maybe I did answer this question. But I'm going to answer it again because I want to make sure I check it off my list. So with the PPA loans, you guys remember the, was it Payroll Protection Act? During COVID, a lot of companies had to shut down. Not just because of the illness itself or the spread of the disease itself where you can't be near each other, but because of demand plummeting. So if people aren't allowed to gather, there's a lot of businesses, service businesses, that are serving other businesses that don't have anything to do. So they're at home. Not just that businesses aren't making enough. Remember, people were out spending money like crazy because the government gave us money, and people had time at home and a bunch of money, thought, well, I'm going to do home improvement projects, or I'm going to buy me a TV or a couch. I bought some couches with my COVID money. I got a lot of it, too, because I had a lot of kids. And I needed some new furniture. That's what spiked up inflation, by the way. I'm sorry for playing my small part in that. So the government came up with the Payroll Protection Act, where the government was going to loan employers money to keep their payroll up, even though their workers weren't working. So instead of laying people off, the Payroll Protection Act was going to pay those payrolls. We're talking about millions, billions, it's a lot of money. A lot of money to think about every payroll in the United States. So they're going to have, if anybody gets laid off from COVID, you can, we're going to support them with the Payroll Protection Act because the government didn't want the effects of joblessness to hit the economy. So it's sort of a way of keeping the economy stimulated. Yes, it's bad. It's not supply-side economics. It's debt economics. It's Keynesian. But that was the decision they made. And that's just my political opinion. Maybe you disagree. But the idea behind these loans was that they're forgivable. So the government wasn't just going to give the money to companies. They're going to say, "We're going to you pay your payroll. You show us that you paid your payroll. And we'll loan you the money to cover it. And then we'll forgive the loan provided you meet the certain stipulations, provided that you were really qualified for it." So if the government just gives them the money's gone and they don't have any recourse to the employer because you had to meet certain standards. And, you know, a lot of people, as is with any big program, would try to defraud it. And I think a lot of people tried to defraud it. You're going to have fraud in anything. So it was a loan and so that the government had recourse to get the money back if they had to or needed to or if the employer didn't follow the rules. But the idea was that you're not going to pay this loan back. It's really a gift. It's a gift in the form of a forgivable loan. And by the way, from a tax perspective, do you know if somebody gives you a loan and then forgives it, you have to report that as income on your taxes? So if somebody loans you $10,000 and you only pay back five and they say, you know what, you don't have to pay back the other five, just forget about it. It's $5,000 of income and you owe taxes on that $5,000, which is, you know, kind of sadly funny because if you can't, if you don't have the $5,000 to pay back your loan, neither do you have the $500 to pay your tax on it. But okay. The government's going to make you pay, by the way. So that's the idea. So what Jeff's asking about is, Christians, don't we have an obligation to pay our debt? Aren't we saying we're going to pay our debt? And this brings to mind, because this guy, here, I'm going to tell a side story because it makes the show longer. It brings to mind my brother. My brother was raised in church, but he does not regularly go to church, maybe a few times a year. He goes to my parents when they're out in Arizona. But he was taught this Christian ethic of you repay your debts. So there was a time when the housing market was bad that he could have let his house go and made better on the deal. But he said, you know, I don't want to do that because they loaned me the money when I needed it and I promised to pay them back. And, you know, the lender, the bank, they're going to lose on the deal because my house isn't worth enough. He didn't think that was the right thing to do. Listen, even to a big nameless, faceless mega bank. Because what's the idea? Well, my word is that I was going to pay you back this money. And yes, if I don't pay you back this money, if I can't, there's a difference between won't and can't. you have the collateral which says, you know, if you don't pay back this money, we're going to take your house on a housing loan or your car on a car loan. But in an economy where housing markets plummet, if you owe $200,000 on your loan and your house is only worth $150,000, what's the math say? Here's your house. This satisfies my loan debt to you because the house is the collateral, but you're only going to get $150 out of the $200. You'll never see the other $50. That's not the idea of the loan. The ethos, if you will, is like, you're only going to take my house if I can't pay it back. You're only going to take the collateral if I can't pay it back. There's no idea that I'm not going to pay this back because it's financially advantageous to me. And that would be kind of a pharisaical way of looking at a loan. Well, hold on. I know I said I would pay it back, but the contract stipulates if I don't pay it back, you get the collateral. So, huh? Letter of the law. Here's your collateral. I'm not going to pay it back. No, you honor your word and you try to pay it back. So that's, you know, how my brother was raised. And a lot of Christians, we think this way because, like, we're supposed to pay back our loans. Well, what about the Payroll Protection Act? We're not paying these loans back. If we're a Christian business owner, or even if we're a church, churches have payroll, and they were just as eligible as this loan for anybody else. It didn't sit right with a lot of people that a church was getting a loan from the government. And the more I talk about this, the more I think, yes, I did answer this, and I even used the example of my brother. And I always like to think when I answer these things twice, I hope I answer it the exact same way twice so I don't seem double-minded. But the idea with the Payroll Protection Act is, you know, in the front end, the purpose of that loan is to be forgivable. So your obligation there is to not apply for the loan unless you're eligible, to pay the payroll out to your employees as promised, and to take the forgiveness of the loan as stipulated on the front end. So no, I don't think it's unethical not to pay a loan back that somebody says you don't have to pay it back. Now, somewhere out there, there's taxpayers saying, that's my money and you took it from me. Well, it's the government's money. Aren't we a government for the people and by the people? Yeah, that's who we elected to do it, and they take our money through taxes. If you don't like it, elect somebody else. Not that that's feasible. And by the way, as a Christian, we should appreciate more than anybody else on earth having our debt paid. Because I owed a debt I could not pay, and Jesus paid a debt he did not owe. Jesus paid our sin debt on the cross. Our unrighteousness and sin was imputed to him, and his righteousness was imputed to us. All right. So don't scoff at grace. So whether you agree with the economic or political reason or governmental reason for the loan, you don't have to pay it back because the expectation was that it's a forgivable loan. That's on the front end. This is forgivable. By the way, if you want to go to a theological perspective, should we sin so that grace may abound? May it never be. No. That's antinomianism. All right. Now let's move on to A Billboard Too Far, Part 3. So I've been talking about being asked, not, or told. They didn't ask me. They don't come back. Basically being banned, forbidden from attending church services or church activities on the campus of First Baptist Church. They emailed me tonight through the church email system. They've got open basketball in the parking lot this Friday. This basketball coach would sure love to bring his son. It's not going to happen. That outreach event's not going to outreach to me. So not kicked out because I wasn't a member. And as I've said, there's good reason for not being a member there. But that was a couple podcasts that I talked about. I talked about, should a church ever do that? Like, why would a church do that? Now I'm going to talk about my understanding versus what someone else's understanding might be of the Y Cross Point or Y Rock Bridge or Y Elevation websites. So from my point of view, I see an organization in Cross Point that doesn't meet the biblical idea of a church that I think is overall bad for our town, that I think people shouldn't go to, and I'm going to make a website that says, I really don't think you should go there. Here's why. Somebody else sees that. They have no idea how I feel. They have no idea that I've been paying attention for the last 5 years when they had a woman preach in the pulpit. I remembered that. When they baptized unrepentant lesbians who were together in a romantic relationship, I remembered that. When they've been growing and growing, like, I've been paying attention. A lot of people, you're just driving by on the way. Say, if you're somebody from First Baptist and you don't understand why I did that, here's what you do on Sunday. You pull out of your neighborhood, you drive by Cross Point, you think there's some people in church, that's nice, and then you go to your church and you don't give a thought about what's going on with the children, young adults, and adults there. I don't know if they have seniors. What's being preached there, how that church is operating. You don't think about it, you just go to your church, okay? You hear that somebody goes there, oh, isn't it so nice that they hear about Jesus? That's your thought about it. I think this church is not operating biblically, and it's growing bigger and bigger, and therefore the problem's getting bigger and bigger. I think I'll make a website about it and express my concerns. Maybe show the people who are going there and thinking about going there some good reasons for not going there. You know, not hateful. Just, I'm concerned. I remember one time, I'll never forget it. We had Chick-fil-A catered one time at Field Turf when I worked there for the whole plant. And one of the operators, his name was Neil, he grabbed a second sandwich and he said, not greedy, just hungry, not greedy, just hungry. He didn't want anybody to look and think of him like, man, that's a greedy guy grabbing two sandwiches when the rest of us only had one. Man, a Chick-fil-A sandwich don't fill you up. I eat a Chick-fil-A, get number one, I'm still hungry. And he's out there working in the plant. He's hot. This is a grown man. He needs a man's meal. Not greedy, just hungry. And I want people to think of it like, not hateful, just concerned. Not hateful, just concerned. And I think some people see that and think, if he'd do that to that church, he'd do that to our church or any church. Let me use baptism as an example to show, like, why that's not the case, why that's not true, why that doesn't line up. And I'm going to use the example of my daughter's baptism. I don't know, I think I've told this story before. My daughter went to Sunday school, went to church, heard the gospel, made a profession of faith that seemed legit. Now, what happened when my daughter made her profession of faith? She stated that she wanted to get baptized. So, in order to get baptized at First Baptist, she had to attend a Now That I'm a Christian session where they talk about what's expected out of you as a Christian, what does baptism mean. And not only that, especially since she's a child, she had to go talk to the pastor so he could make sure it was a legit conversion, that she's not just a little kid wanting to do something that will make adults happy. Because I think a lot of kids get baptized for that reason. A lot of kids just do stuff to make adults happy. Baptism is viewed as good. We clap when people get baptized because we're happy. So a kid might say, I want to do that, and make everybody happy and clap. So not only did she have to go to this Now That I'm a Christian session or class or whatever you want to call it on a Sunday, we had to go to the office and she had to sit with Brother Kyle and Kyle to ask her about salvation and make sure she really understood it. And I determined, as her father and her mother there, and Kyle determined, like, yeah, this is legit. So the church is going to baptize this girl. Listen, it's not some person, it's the church who baptizes people. The church, corporate, does it. Yes, an individual human being dunks the person, but the church is doing that baptism. Not only is that person saying, I've come to Christ, I identify with Christ, the church is saying, we identify this person as a Christian, and they're going to undergo this rite of baptism, this ordinance. And then the church secretary, who's a friend of mine, the secretary at the time, or one of the secretaries, because we know all these churches have a blue million secretaries, enough payroll for secretaries. I don't have a secretary where I work. My boss doesn't have a secretary, but all these pastors have secretaries. So one of the blue million church secretaries writes me and says, hey, do you want to do the baptism? Well, absolutely I want to do the baptism. And I told my wife, I said, you know, Sandy wrote me and asked me if I want to do the baptism, but I was surprised that they did. Because I'm not a member of the church, maybe they'll let me because I'm a member of a church, I'm a licensed minister, but she probably wasn't thinking about that. She just probably sends a bunch of these emails to people. And my wife is real. My wife's old school, y'all. She doesn't think anybody but the minister should do the baptism. Now, she takes it serious. And there's a lot of churches that's in their bylaws that or the covenants. It's only the minister. Only an ordained minister does the baptism. Because remember, it's the church doing it. Now, it doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that you have to be an ordained pastor to do this. In fact, in the Bible, you'll be hard-pressed to find something called ordination. Nevertheless, I wrote back to Sandy and said, yeah, I'll do it. And then I got a call back from the pastor. Hey, can we meet for lunch? Now, I'm the kind of guy, you don't have to take me to lunch to say no. And he brought me there. He's like, you know, you're not a member of the church. And, I can't let you do that. And I said, you didn't have to ask me to lunch to tell me that. Baptism is a church ordinance. And I'm not a member of the church. Of course I can't do it. That's fine. If you don't want to let me do it. Like, I didn't express any disappointment or given any flack at all. He might have thought he was going to have a hard conversation. You have to say something hard to me, just send me an email. You don't have to take me to lunch. But we went to lunch, and he said something to me. He was like, you know, you've been going here a few years now, and it's sort of like you're dating but not getting married. Like, you date your girlfriend, but you don't get married. And I told him right then and there, I said, Kyle, I remember the first day I was there, and I saw the Haze machine. And that made me angry. And I thought I was going to say something to you, but I didn't, because I think Kyle works for people who want that Haze machine, and I don't want to be a member in covenant community with people who think the Haze machine is okay, because they have a different idea of holiness and what's okay than I do. But guess what? They have a biblical idea of the ordinance, I didn't say sacrament, ordinance of baptism. Because at least nominally, First Baptist Church or XYZ Baptist Church in town, whether it be Tabernacle or Pine Grove or Atco or Faith Baptist or Grace Baptist, we got a million of them. Nominally, at least, you have meaningful church membership. We're not going to let just anybody either get baptized or do baptism. Okay? And I think you Baptists listen to me, especially the ones I know from town, understand this. Listen, if you don't understand this, please go make an appointment with Pastor Kyle at the office and have him explain baptism to you. I've heard him do it. He has the right idea of what baptism is. Okay? He knows what he's talking about. I've never heard Kyle answer a Bible question wrong. Okay? He knows the theology. Okay? Please, if you don't understand the ordinance of baptism, why a member has to do it, why it's a church thing, why it's done a certain way, why you go to a class first, please call him and ask that. It will be his joy as a Baptist pastor to explain it to you. I promise you. Because you need to know this. I know a lot of people don't think about it, okay? But it's a thing. And I respected and recognized that they had the rule and they're trying to do it the right way. My daughter is 10 now. She can't even drive herself to church. One day she's going to have to make a decision about her church membership. She's going to have to look at what First Baptist Church does and what they've done and say, do I want to be a part of this? She's just a kid. There is an expectation on her because she's a church member. I don't care how old you are. If you're a church member, you're a church member. If you're part of the body of Christ, the body of the Christ, you got the Holy Spirit living in you. You're going to have to, through the Spirit's guidance, make the right decision about right and wrong, okay? But she doesn't control where she goes to church. She can't drive. She's a kid. She's under my care and her mom's care. All right? But I want to contrast that with Cross Point or a church like Cross Point, okay? So this is not that they have the purple haze at Cross Point. This is not that they sing Reckless Love by Corey Ashbery. This is not that they charge a dollar for coffee. This is not that they call themselves Reformed Charismatics, which is a theological position I disagree with. This is not that they'd let a woman preach a Sunday service and have men on staff report to that woman as the executive director. This is not that they were associated with the Willow Creek Bill Hybels movement. Okay? This is not that Pastor James was trained through Westridge and has those Westridge New Spring associations. This is not that in his sermons, James craps all over Baptist churches, the very churches he gets his members from, the sheep stealing, if you will, that he craps all over the churches people grew up with and gives them an alternative in town instead of having them and going working out their issues in the churches they come from. Okay? He's just taking people from Church of God, taking people from Tabernacle Baptist, taking people from First Baptist. You know it's true because you've seen them. Okay? This is not any of that. All right? If you want to know about the stack of problems I have with Crosspoint, go to whycrosspoint.com. But I'm going to tell you about baptism, okay? Because I think we're aligned there. The other day, they had spontaneous baptisms at Crosspoint. They had some baptisms that were planned, but they had spontaneous ones as well. And I think they had something like 80, okay? And do you know who can perform a baptism at Crosspoint on their kid or their friend or whoever? Pretty much anybody. Are they a drunk? Are they shacked up? You name it. Do they come to church one Sunday out of four? Anybody can perform a baptism there. I think if they ask, if they say, I'm a Christian and I want to baptize my kid, they'll let them. Now, I'm not naming anybody, I'm not trying to sit here and gossip over people, but guys, there's 80 baptisms, they show the pictures. I live in the same town, okay? We all know each other. But if I didn't know anything about those people, I know this, is that Crosspoint City Church doesn't have meaningful membership. There's no such thing as a voting member of the church. There's no such thing as a church member there who's under church discipline or gets kicked out because of their lifestyle. Because it's seeker-sensitive goat church, all that matters is that you come. Now, they may prevent you from being in some volunteer position if you're not living a certain way. But they don't respect the ordinance of baptism the way First Baptist does. And it has to do with the membership. It's just a show-up place, okay? It's a show-up place, quite frankly. I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong because not just because I say I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong because you guys know this. It's a show-up place for people who didn't like the churches we already had in town. The churches we already had in town actually respected, to some degree, membership and the ordinance of baptism. Crosspoint just does baptism. All right, anybody can just do it. Remember the Seinfeld episode where he goes to the reservation counter and he says, all right, I'd like to pick up my car. And she says, I'm sorry, we don't have your car. And Jerry says, but I had a reservation. She goes, yes, I understand that. And he goes, I don't think you do. Because if you had a reservation and you held it, I'd have my car. And he goes, anybody can just take them. You know, anybody can just go dunking people in water when some 15-year-old or 10-year-old girl or boy, for that matter, says, I want to get baptized because I went to church camp or I went to church week or I heard an invitation. Anybody can just dunk a kid. There's going to be no end of kids and adults too, wanting to do that. And I want to rejoice in those baptisms. I want to rejoice in that. I want to rejoice in those people. I'm not telling those people that your baptism's invalid. If you legitimately have repented of your sins and placed your faith in Jesus Christ, I'm not blaming you as a new Christian because the ordinance of baptism isn't properly respected at Crosspoint because there's no such thing as ministry. And they'll just let anybody, whether they're in a sinful lifestyle or holy lifestyle, do it. There's no such thing as church discipline or Christian accountability because it's just show up church. Listen, you don't baptize them and just hope it gets better later. There's something that comes before, okay? You don't just baptize unrepentant lesbians and think, well, maybe 6 months from now they'll move out of the same house and split up. No, you say, well, I'm not putting you in this water if you came here from your lesbian house and you're going back to your lesbian house because you haven't demonstrated the fruit of repentance. No, I'm not going to monitor you like Big Brother and make sure you never sin again. But if there's some obvious sin in your life or obvious unbiblical lifestyle, we're not going to baptize you. Guys, I've witnessed it. This is not me speaking in ignorance. I've witnessed it. I've asked the questions. Do you have a voting church membership? No. So if there's really no such thing as a member of a church, that's why they always say Crosspoint family, Crosspoint family. All right? What are you really? Like, what is your official relationship? Are you somebody on a CRM list? You're on the email list. I'm on the email list of First Baptist. Doesn't mean I'm a member. If you look, and please go look at this, listeners, at Article 6 of the Baptist Faith and Message. It's not the Bible, but it's supposed to reflect biblical beliefs. All right? Go read that article. And go read the article on the ordinances of baptism and the Lord's Supper. And you ask yourself, does Crosspoint meet up with that? The answer is no. And like I said, without all the purple haze and stuff like that, they've cheapened an ordinance. And listen, that's no good for the people being baptized or the people baptizing. Because if you're not expected to live a Christian lifestyle, then what's it all about? Whatever happened to holiness? Okay? Not trying to be a legalist or put a law on people, just asking, whatever happened to holiness? So do you get it now? All you people making phone calls about me, why would he do this? Listen, we were at lunch, and I just mentioned it to some of my friends. They said, that's the most Seth thing ever. Like, they get it. And can I tell you this? Let me just tell you this. Just like I have relationships, fruitful, loving, caring, kind relationships, amicable relationships with people who are Roman Catholic in town, I have good relationships with people at Crosspoint. Do you know that, people who go to Crosspoint? I have plenty of friends who go there and people that I care about. I was with my friend the other day, and he said, hold on, I'll be right back. I've got to go drop my kids off at church. And he says, it's your favorite church. And I said, oh, you're taking them into the purple haze. Yup. You know what he did? He dropped his kids off and came back. That's my friend. And I'm his friend. That's that. He knows how I feel. I don't have any hatred for it. It's quite the opposite. It's because I have friends there. It's because there's people that I love and care about there. My next door neighbors go there. I think the world of my next door neighbors. They're some of the best people I've ever met. But it weighs on me and makes me sad that they go there. And if you can't relate to that, doesn't it, if there's an abortion clinic that exists, does it weigh on you and make you sad that people go there for abortions? And this is a reductio ad absurdum. Obviously, the people are not going to Crosspoint murdering babies. And the official position of that church is probably, please don't murder babies. Okay? You're not going to go burn the Planned Parenthood down. You might stand outside with a sign and protest, but certainly you're going to say, don't go there. That's why Bartow County Family Resources has an ultrasound machine in a van to show people who, like single mothers and people thinking about abortion, please don't kill your baby. We'll give you this ultrasound so you can see that you have a baby with a heartbeat. Not only that, we'll give you clothes and formula and we'll train you how to be a parent. We're going to do everything we can to come by and help you. Please don't kill that baby. Please don't kill that baby and please come to Christ. Guys, that's the way I feel about Crosspoint. When I see children walking into First Baptist, I think, here are some children who are going to get a biblical lesson about Noah's Ark today. When I see children walk into Crosspoint, I think, there they go to get left off by their parents while they can have a concert atmosphere in the purple haze. There they go to hear James Griffin dump on the other Baptist churches and act like we're the bee's knees. Everybody's got it wrong, but come here. I mean, y'all are criticizing me for saying they're wrong. You don't listen to their sermons where he just insidiously and subtly dumps on everything that was taught when we were 10 and 20 years old, guys. All right, you didn't listen, I did. You didn't pay attention, I did. You don't feel the weight on you for your fellow citizens and loved ones and friends and little children that are in your life that I do. So when I see that kid left off in the Cross Point kids ministry area with some cross pointer with his $2 coffee, and Lord knows what curriculum they use, while their parents go to the Purple Haze to hear Reckless Love song, where our God is reckless, to hear some sermon that is 90% biblical and 10% you didn't see what he was doing there, but I did. It weighs on me. When I see the Purple Haze grow, and then the other Baptist churches in town think we got to whore it up with our own Purple Haze to look like them, well, they're showing more leg. Let's show them more leg too. When the harlot is drawing all the people who want the harlotry, and your answer is, let's be more harlot-like instead of being different, it weighs on me. Okay? That's why I did what I did. You may not like the way I did it. I don't like the way you didn't do it. And if all it took was just paying attention to the ordinances instead of clicking like on Facebook when you see somebody get baptized there. Guys, anybody else watch The Mandalorian? That show's awesome. I don't care if you... I know Disney's godless and awful and full, trying to turn everybody into transgender homosexuals. I have Disney Plus and I want to watch The Mandalorian. Okay? What's The Mandalorian say? Remember, that's his religion. His life is his religion. They wanted to take his guns. He says, guns are a part of my religion. He's a fanatic. When they have to make a hard decision or do something, this is the way. Remember in the season finale of season 3 where the super duper rocket ships, rocket pack stormtroopers are attacking them and Paz Vizsla stays behind so everybody else can escape? He says, this is the way. Guys, when we do baptism the right biblical way that reflects the expectation of holiness and the necessity of church membership and fulfilling out the congregation before God, this is the way. And when we see it done wrongly, systematically, at an organizational-wide level like it's done at Cross Point, we don't click like because that's not the way. And we need to have conversations. And some of you are going to say, well, Seth, what are the conversations you're having with people? All right? I like, just as a point of grace to others, to not make other people endure conversations with me. All right? You don't want to have the Asperger's conversation. I get the glare, and I'm all serious, and I'm like, this is wrong, and you're doing it, and you're ruining your children's life. Why don't you stop doing this? All right? I don't want to tie it to Seth Dunn. I want to say, this is the website. Look here and make a decision. Nobody's ever got kicked out of church before for handing out pamphlets. This is for a voter information pack. Here's Matthew Gamble's running for the state office. We're going to put door hangers out for Matthew. This is where Matthew stands on the issues. This is where the opponent stands on the issues. Thank God nobody runs an opponent against Matthew here. We don't even run Democrats here. They're going to lose. They don't waste the time and money. Okay? This is my door hanger. You want to hand out Easter cards to invite people to church. You want to pay for a billboard to invite people to church. Man, my billboard says, please don't go here on Easter. Please go somewhere else. But Seth, that's divisive. Absolutely. I want to divide every single butt from every single chair at Cross Point so they can go to a church that represents biblical normalcy or fidelity better. Not a perfect church. There's not one. That's where I am on that. All right? I get that people feel that way. I get why people would make phone calls to those elders and say, man, you tell him not to come back. But all y'all people out there saying, well, you need to have a conversation with him. When have you ever had a conversation about it with me? Because let me tell you something. You have the conversation with me, you're going to come out seeing things my way. Because I'm going to present that case to you. you're going to understand it. Even if you don't agree with me, you're going to understand where I'm coming from. But listen, I think a lot of people don't want to understand where others are coming from. They just want to avoid any appearance of conflict or disagreement. And thank God the writers of the New Testament weren't afraid of conflict or disagreement, or we wouldn't have the New Testament. I want you to Google this. How many times did Jesus insult people? I saw an article yesterday. They counted up the number of times Jesus insulted people in the Bible. It's a lot. Jesus ran into conflict, and I'm not Stephen Furtick narcissizing myself into Jesus here, but Jesus ran into conflict with the religious leaders, chief priests, elders, and scribes of his day. Should we Christians not therefore expect that if we're trying to do some righteous cause, that not only the world will come up against us, but maybe some people who are church elders or church leaders who have a certain status quo, and what they don't want is phone calls. What they don't want is conversation that's hard. Because listen, I can have a conversation with my friends and say, well, I don't think you should go to Cross Point. And they say, well, I'm going to go there anyway. I say, okay, I've said my piece. I love you. Okay, thank you for saying your piece. Let's go about our lives and friendships together. And I'm too socially inept to notice if they call me half the time from there. I know there's a lot of people who would just like not say, all right, you're terrible, Seth. I'm not going to call you anymore or hang out with you anymore. I wouldn't notice. Maybe they do it. I don't know. But there's the way I care about people and the way I care about my city and the way I care about my Savior and His kingdom looks different than maybe the way you do or don't care about it. And that's the difference, by the way, between whycrosspoint.com, which does exist, and why XYZ Baptist Church that doesn't exist and wouldn't exist. All right, that's part three. I think I can think up a part four. These are things we need to consider and think about. I think part four is going to be sort of interesting. I want to talk about the idea of caring for souls and eldership and who you see as your adversary and maybe even a little entrapment. And with that tease, I'm going to go get back to work. I've got a query. Oh, I've got the great, interesting, quick-running query that I'm working on. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.